Good Ner Shabbos. This week is Parshas Chukas, and the topic of today's shiur is sexual immorality, chok or mishpat. There has been a distinction that we make in mitzvahs between whether it is considered a, so to speak, decree, an arbitrary rule that we're obligated to follow, even though it's very difficult for it to make sense to us. Although in other shiurim, we've pointed out that the Rambam in a number of places, including in the end of Me'ilah and the end of Hilchos Temura, says that even chukim have reasons, they just don't have reasons that are easy for us to understand. But there are mitzvahs that are chukim, and then there are mitzvahs that are mishpatim. Those are mitzvahs that have some kind of logic and rationale that's very easy and obvious to see. And the question today that we're going to ponder is, what about the various rules of sexual morality? Are they in the category of chok, or are they in the category of mishpat? Are they considered mitzvahs that don't necessarily have an easily understood logical rationale or not? Now, you might ask, what's the nafkamina? What is the difference? You still have to do it. So what's the difference whether or not there is a logical, understandable reason versus not having a logical, understandable reason? So we'll see that the Rambam discusses this in the sixth parak of the Shemona Prakim, and he discusses a fundamental difference between a chok and a mishpat and how a person is supposed to relate to a chok and a mishpat, which we're going to get to. But first, let's start out with the well-known Rashi based on the Chazal, that the Parsha starts out talking about the Parah Aduma, and it says, Zos chukas haTorah, this is the chok of the Torah. Rashi says, Lefi shehasatan v'umos olam moinen es Yisrael, the Satan and the other nations, They challenge the Jews. Lomar maha mitzvah zos umatam yeshba. What's the reason for this mitzvah? Paraduma is a very strange mitzvah. It makes some people tahor and other people tamei. What's it all about? Laficha kasa b'chuka. That's why the Torah says it's a chok. Gzerihi milfonai. This is a decree. Ve'enocha reshus b'hara achareha. And you have no permission to think about it. Now, literally, that sounds like you have no permission to even wonder about it. However, and maybe some people have misinterpreted that Chazal that way, but again, as we pointed out, the Rambam in a number of places, including in the end of Hilchos Temura and in the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, says that it is praiseworthy to try to understand and delve and think about all mitzvos, including the chukim. It's only that the chok is not easily understandable or apparent. And when it means over here, ein lecha reshus laharar acharei, you have no permission to wonder about it or to think about it, it means to wonder about it dismissively. And to think about it dismissively, meaning, what's the point in this mitzvah? What's the use? It's kind of ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. Right? So that brings us, since this week's parsha, the topic is chukim, that really brings us to wonder about, what about all the various restrictions around sexual immorality? Is it a chok, or is it a mishpat? Is it something that's logical and apparent, or is it something that we just have to accept? After all, many of the requirements, especially if we follow them as the Torah expects of us, has us conduct our lives and live a way where most people naturally would not live. So most people would say, well, you know, you should be faithful to your spouse. You shouldn't commit adultery, right? Most people, you know, might say, well, you shouldn't be promiscuous and run around with multiple partners. Perhaps your average, regular, so to speak, moral-minded person would say that. And today, even those things are debatable with same-sex marriages and open in arrangements that people have and people not even bothering to get married. So even those values are becoming questioned. But let's just say your average conservative-minded, decent family person, Gentile or Jew, is going to buy into basic morality. But Shemiras Ha'inayim, to watch your thoughts, to protect your thoughts, and severe prohibitions against masturbation, such strong rules that restrict a person's basic natural inclinations, it seems like it's like a chok. It seems like it's something if the Torah tells us we have to do it, so we'll do it like anything else, like shatnez. But it's really, really difficult, and it's not our first inclination. It's very naturally against our natural inclinations to subject ourselves to such severe restrictions on our behavior. So that's the question for discussion today. And again, as I said, as I raised before, what's the nafka mina? What is the difference? Who cares whether it's a chok or a mishpat? You have to do it anyway. So the Rambam in the Shmona Prakim in Perek Shishi addresses this point because he has a problem. He has a problem that really is a problem only for him because of his particular system of thought. Other Rishon would have no problem. Well, I'll explain this to you in a minute. The Gemara says that the proper way to approach one's desire to sin is that one should say to himself, not that I don't want to eat treif, and not that I don't want to commit a rias, and not that I don't want to steal, but the other way around. I should want these things, but the Torah tells me that I'm not allowed to do it, and therefore I do it because Hashem says so. That's what the Gemara seems to say as the ideal, as the standard. And it says over here, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Oimer, while Yomer Adam, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, a person should not say, I don't want to eat meat and milk, I don't want to have shatnez, I don't want to be involved in sexual immorality. Ela avshi, I want it. Uma'esa avi shevashmayim gozer alai. My Father in heaven decreed on me. So the Gemara seems to be saying that the right approach is not to say I don't want to do these things, but I want to do these things, but I choose to obey Hashem. Now the Rambam has a problem with that, and here's why he has a problem with that. And again, it's a problem that only he would have because of his particular system of thought. Because we know that the Rambam was very enamored of Greek philosophy, and oftentimes when he felt that there was truth to the ideas, he made them a part of his Torah and ethical thinking. So the Rambam says in the Shmona Prakim that the philosophers believe as follows. The philosophers believe that the ultimate purpose of any type of belief system, and the Rambam is talking about the Torah as he adapts it, is the refinement of character and midos, which ultimately is the refinement of the soul, and the refinement of the soul leads to whatever degree of Olam Haba and Dveikus HaKadosh Baruch Hu and immortality that comes from that refinement of the soul. But the end game is the refinement of the soul. So if the end game is the refinement of the soul, then as a person matures and develops in their Yira Shamayim, the Rambam says, that the person should desire less and less forbidden things. Because the soul is becoming evolved, and the person is becoming more Davak to Hashem. So he would not want to do an Avera. He would not want to do to steal. He would not want to kill. He would not want to hurt somebody. So the Rambam says we've got a contradiction because the philosophers, but the Rambam doesn't really care about the philosophers because the philosophers are not Torah Misinai. But the Rambam bought into and accepted anything from philosophy that made sense and was logical. And according to the Rambam system, it makes a lot of sense that if the ultimate purpose is the refinement of the soul, then one should come to higher and higher degrees of not wanting to do averas, not having self-control and reaching a point where even though you desire to do the Avera, you don't do the Avera. But no, one should be at a degree of not wanting it. That's what seems to be, according to the Rambam, the philosophical and the logical position. So that's in direct contradiction to the Gemara that we said before, where a person should want to do the Avera, but still not do it because Hashem says so. So the Rambam resolves the contradiction and says that there's a difference between Chukim and Mishpatim. He said, any mitzvah that's obvious, the meaning of it and the purpose, that the purpose is clear that it's for a understood moral objective, then a person should not want to violate it. And as their soul becomes more elevated, as their character becomes more elevated, they will naturally not want to do these things. Hayitachin? Can you imagine Rav Moshe Feinstein would want to steal? It makes no sense. And that's what the Rambam's saying, that any normal moral behavior, any normal moral activity, as the person becomes more developed in his character, would not want to violate it as he develops his character. On the other hand, the Rambam says, chukim, things like shatnas, that make no sense. Things like shatnas and paraduma, they're really hard to understand. Their reason is not apparent. So the natural desire would be then to violate it. And the only reason why you listen is because you're a servant of Hashem and you obey Hashem. And that's the distinction that the Rambam sets up. Now, interestingly enough, and you could look this up, the Rambam is clear, and he lists arayas in a category of chukim. So the Rambam, as he lists it, he talks about, you know, he says stealing, of course, and murder. These things are certainly not chukim. Those are obvious. But he says that arayas and shatnas, paraduma, all these things are what he calls mitzvah shimiyas, that you have to do them. You just listen to them, but you really want them, right? So that's what the Rambam says about arayas. On the other hand, the other ones like theft and even perhaps something like kibbutz av ha'em, all those things that seem to be based on normal moral behavior, so you would not just be obligated to follow them, but you should develop your soul to the extent that you don't want to do them. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara that the Rambam quotes from Rabbi Yishmael, he also says arayas, right? He says, Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer, Lo Yomer Adam, Iafshi Lecho Basa B'Cholav, Iafshi Lil Bo Shatnes, Iafshi Lovo Ala Erva. A person should not say, I don't want to eat meat and milk, I don't want to wear shatnes, I don't want to have relations with an erva. Rather, Ela Afshi, I want to, but what can I do? My Father in Heaven made a decree, Avish Shemayim Gozer Alai. So it would seem Rabbi Shimon Gamliel seems to be supporting, the reading of that Gemara seems to support the Rambam, because it chooses things that really don't make a lot of sense, Bas V'Cholov, Shatnez, and then we add in Arayas. Problem is, there's another Gemara in Yuma, which is pretty clear that Arayas are not Chukim. Let's take a look. So Gemara in Yuma, Daf Samed Zayin Amud Beis, Tana Rabbanon, Es Mishpatai Ta'asu, Dvarim She'omalei Lo Nichtavu, Dinu She'yichtavu. What are Mishpatim? Things that, if they were not written, it's logical that they would be written anyway. Ve'elohein, and what are they? Avodas Kochavim, Gilei Arayas U'Shfichas Damim, murder, sexual immorality, and idolatry, U'Birchas Hashem. Es Chukas Ha'Tishmor, and what are the Chukim? Dvarim She'asatan Meishav Aleihem, those are things that the Satan has complaints about. Ve'elohein, Achilas Chazer, eating treif, levisha shatnas, wearing shatnas, chalitza, taras metzora, seir mishaleach, the scapegoat, and all those things. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara in Yuma is pretty clear that arayas are considered a mishpat, that they're logical. So we have a contradiction. And I want to tell you that the contradiction is very important. It's very important to resolve this contradiction because the the approach, according to the Rambam, is different, right? We all agree, Torah tells us we're not allowed to think sexual thoughts or have sexual desires. However, when the desire pops into one's head, you have to, whatever you do, you try to distract yourself from it. You do your best you can to remove the desire. But is this something inherently wrong with having the desire? Right? So let's say one is spending some time with friends or family and notices another person's wife and feels a certain amount of chemda. So slos achmud, you're not allowed to have the desire. You have to take your mind off it. It's very good. It's very healthy, very appropriate. However, is there something inherently wrong with that drive? Is that drive a lack of refinement of character? Or is it, hey, it's normal. We like to eat. There's nothing wrong with wanting to eat. There's nothing wrong with wanting that. We have to distract ourselves, do the best we can, because we have a prohibition even to think those thoughts. But we're human, and if the thought pops into your head for a moment, the fact that it popped into your head, now you have a chiyuv to try to remove it. But the fact that the thought is there is not unnatural. Or is it a mishpat? Which is, no, this is a sign that you haven't refined your character enough. You need to work on refining your character more. Put in other words, if one does tshuva, what is the requirement of the tshuva? Is the tshuva the requirement that you have to do the best you can not to violate, and if you violate, you do tshuva? Or is part of the tshuva process changing one's whole perspective and one's whole belief system and character so that he does not desire it? And it would seem that there's a contradiction between the Rambam and the Gemara. And the Rambam quotes versus the Gemara and Yuma. So there are possible ways of answering this, and I think that the simplest answer is that arayus is a very large topic. Sexual immorality is a very large topic, and it covers many, many different behaviors. As we explained, it covers many, many different behaviors, all the way from the ones that I think many people would buy into, such as maintaining boundaries, adultery, not molesting or attacking anybody. These are things that they're essentially theft. When you violate another person's boundaries, take another person's wife, molest somebody, this is theft, this is a violation of basic boundaries. Any normal civilized human being would agree that this is a problem. So to desire that means that there's a certain chisaron in the person's character development. One might argue that. And those arise, therefore, might be reasonable to say that they're in the category of mishpat. However, there are many, many requirements and restrictions that are so personally intrusive and so demanding, like the idea of not even being able to think a forbidden sexual thought, or the prohibition of any kind of masturbation, any kind of pleasure outside of the bond of marriage. This is very, very difficult to do. It feels very unnatural for people. Perhaps that would be in the category of chok. However, even though that's a good Talmudic kind of answer, because in the Gemara, whenever you have a contradiction, so what do? You reinterpret the two contradicting sides and find a middle ground. I actually don't really think that's the answer. I think that the answer is that the Rambam never meant to say that a mishpat was absolute or a chok was absolute. I believe the Rambam meant to say that it was relative, meaning at different times people find relevance and meaning to certain prohibition, and at other times they're hard to understand. Because really, right, there should be no logical distinction between a chok and a mishpat. The Rambam says, as I said, in the end of Hilchos and Me'ilah, and in the end of Hilchos Temura, the Rambam is very clear that it's praiseworthy to try to understand the reasons for the chukim too, and that there are reasons for them. So what does it mean that you would desire, that it's okay to desire to violate a chok as opposed to desiring to violate a mishpat? Obviously, it's talking about the subjective state, meaning if you've evolved to the point, let's say there's 100 mitzvahs, or whatever, let's call it 613, even though they all don't apply to us at all times, but let's just say there's 613 mitzvahs, right? And let's say 300 of them are chukim and 313 are mishpatim. And over time, you develop and you're learning and understanding, and now only 100 seem like chukim and 513 seem like mishpatim. Then the same rule would apply, that whatever you're able to understand, so this is considered an elevation of your character, because you're able to abide by what you truly believe in. The other 113 are chukim. So then it's exemplary to want it and still obey Hashem. But it could be a progression in time that a person can understand more and more. And I think that that's the reality when it comes to sexual morality. There's a lot for us to understand over here. Even though on the surface, some of these restrictions seem almost unbearable and completely unnatural, they serve very valuable purposes aside from being a mitzvah. And there are a couple of points I want to bring out. Number one, and this is the most important, which is to understand that there is something about pleasure. There's something about pleasure that requires the context of moderation and conservation and restriction in order to really enjoy it. We enjoy a week of vacation if we're working the whole year. If we're not working the whole year and every day is a day off, we're bored. Nothing thrills us. We, mayim geduvim yimtaku, forbidden fruit tastes sweet. The thing you cannot have is the thing that you enjoy. If we don't put any boundaries or restrictions or moderation on our sexual behavior, instead of having more pleasure, we'll have what all addicts begin to develop, which is tolerance, that we need, that our threshold for enjoyment is higher and higher, and we need greater and greater stimulation to enjoy the same pleasures. And people that are involved in addictive behaviors, sexually addictive behaviors, for example, they end up needing to chase after more and more perverse and more extreme behaviors just to achieve the same level of stimulation and pleasure and novelty. So number one, for very logical and healthy reasons, although sex is to be enjoyed, right? Somehow or another, it's enjoyed within some kind of context of moderation and management. So in the context of marriage, with great love between the partners, but also great responsibility, the fact that at times they're forbidden to each other, this creates a recipe, if managed appropriately. Many people don't manage it appropriately, but this creates a recipe for passion and pleasure at various times. Just as the person who once a year goes on vacation, has a blast, rest of the year, works really hard. So that's the number one, the first and foremost reason. And today, where those boundaries have completely collapsed in the secular world, and you have even relatively young people engaged in all kinds of sexual behavior, are they really happier? Are they really ultimately in the end game experiencing more pleasure? I would suggest not. I would suggest that there's a lot of heartache, a lot of pain, a lot of deprivation, a lot of anxiety, lack of security, very little satisfaction in the long run. All those things come from the inability to properly manage and modulate sexual desires. So that's a very powerful reason for us. I think the focus on love and intimacy that we have to direct our sexual energies, which are a very powerful drive, we have to direct them toward a partner, forces us to constantly work on our relationship. We do not have the option of ignoring the other person or maintaining a feud with the other person or not encountering the other person and living our own lives. Because if we do, we will be deprived of our sexual pleasures, which are very important to all of us. On the other hand, if we find other avenues to gratify that need, we've robbed ourselves of a very powerful motivator for shalom bayis. The Gemara in Shabbos on Kufnun Beis refers to the sexual organ, to the male sexual organ, as the Meisim Shalom, as the peacemaker. It's the peacemaker. It motivates and encourages a bond and connection that if we didn't do that, we might go into our own world and ignore the people around us, because of course people around us are very inconvenient because they don't always agree with us or do what we want. So we'd rather just ignore them if we could, but we can't. And our desires help us if we follow it that way. Obviously, also, to be a good parent, to be a good husband and a good wife requires a lot of delay of gratification. Those skills and that character ability is not grown overnight. It takes years and years of training. And, you know, it begins in our early adulthood. And again, not gratifying sexual desires and learning how to manage and moderate such a strong desire does create within us a certain ability of self-management and self-control, which is extremely valuable to allow us to manage in relationships in the next step. And I think that a final, quite powerful reason for to understand behind these various sexual prohibitions is that although the reason for sex within marriage is not procreation, it's very clear that there's a mitzvah of ona, there's a mitzvah of fulfilling sexual requirements, whether or not one can conceive, whether or not one is pregnant, whether or not one is beyond childbearing years, that mitzvah applies. So sex within marriage is not about procreation. However, it is an aspect, it's a very important aspect of sex within marriage. And therefore, the whole idea and whole awareness that there are opportunities that cannot be wasted is extremely important. A woman has a period once a month. It reminds her that another month went by that she didn't get pregnant. Then it's a reminder that she has only a certain amount of time, a certain number of years to get pregnant. A man, too, has responsibilities. If he's motzi zera levatala, if he wastes his zera, instead of using that within the context of marriage and procreation, he's wasting opportunity. He's wasting opportunity. It's nothing less than a wasted opportunity. And again, it's a reminder that the clock is ticking. Life is short. There are great things to accomplish, and we have to accomplish them as best as we can and as properly as we can. And, you know, everything's a waste if we don't do it the right way, right? What does it say? Ma'asim tovim elu toldosei mishel tzadikim, that good deeds, those are the children of tzadikim. Every minute that we waste is a wasted opportunity. So the point I'm trying to make is as follows, to wrap things up in a clear way. The various prohibitions that we have on ourselves as Torah Jews, some of them are extremely difficult and unnatural. And to whatever extent that we can understand their inner logic and abide by it, to that extent, it's exemplary to reach a level where the desire is not there. However, as the Rambam says, and as at least one Gemara implies, there is going to be a degree of the commandment that's going to be very difficult to understand and very difficult to accept. And in that part, the issue is not to reach a level that you can't, that you don't desire it, but to desire it and yet still abstain because Hashem commands so. And perhaps some of the arayas fit within the category of chok, and some of them fit within the category of mishpat. And we need to follow both sides of the coin to manage what amounts to very difficult and challenging prohibitions. Okay, I'm going to shut off the recording.